one of your problems was to look at the R that was implied by this relationship and compare it to treasury bill rates to see if you could borrow or lend at a better rate than you could using treasuries. And again, that analysis is subject to all those limitations we listed that can cause you to make a small mistake in your estimate of R. This is very much like the implied repo rate of futures. And when I talked about futures, I said that the implied repo rate ought to be the same for the same time horizon for all futures, even on different underlying assets. Because if you can borrow one rate in one market, you should be able to borrow at the same rate in another market. Same thing here. If I look at different options maturing at the same time, I should find that the implied riskless return is the same for options on different underlying assets. We could put General Motors puts and calls here and compare them to Microsoft puts and calls. We should find that the implied riskless return is almost the same in those two situations. And if there isn't, what would we have then? A riskless arbitrage opportunity. Because you could, in effect, borrow at one rate with options on one of those assets and lend at another rate by reversing this with options on the other one. Yes?
So the volatility changes maybe between Microsoft and General Motors are already in the P&L.
That's right. In fact, one of the conclusions is going to be is that the only thing that can affect the difference between P and C are these variables over here. If something else affected it, there'd be a riskless arbitrage opportunity. It's amazing how much you can learn from this. I mean, that's a lot already to know. What do we assume here? No riskless arbitrage opportunities. I'm not too bothered by that. But what bothers me is perfect markets. That covers up a mass of sins. For example, if we're assuming that you can short and earn the interest rate on the proceeds of short selling, you can think of there really being two arbitrage arguments to create this equality. One creates one inequality, the other creates another inequality, and together you get the equality. But to create one of the inequalities is going to require that you short the underlying asset to enforce the arbitrage. And it's assumed in that analysis that you can earn the interest on the proceeds of the short sale. And then, there, of course, someone mentioned trading costs. Transactions costs can create differences. And, of course, in many cases, you might be misled to think you can have a better interest rate in the options market because you didn't consider the non-simultaneous nature of the prices that you're comparing. And maybe if you scanned enough options, you might find one which gave you a little better return than another for borrowing. I'm not saying that never happens. And there are people who spend their days looking for that. That's how they make a living. There are people who spend their day enforcing this relation. If nobody was watching, then it wouldn't work. So naturally, you can imagine there's an equilibrium. Enough people work at it until presumably the profits from yet adding another person to this monitoring procedure isn't worth the cost that individual bears by trading based on put-call parity. The people that are going to be spending the most time worrying about this are people that have the lowest transactions costs. And those are the market makers. People who own seats on the exchange and trade on the floor. They're the ones who are going to be enforcing this. Essentially, people for whom the market imperfections are the least troublesome, they're the ones that are going to be in there enforcing this relationship.